Blog Talk Radio.
Double Helix, where we examine the X's and Y's on a show celebrating the human experience, where your true colors are what ties the room together. So get comfortable, because what you're about to hear is the poetry that we are made of. I'm Afasiana, and Dexter, our other host, who is a wonderful football coach, is there with the kids, being a role model and showing them how to play. So we're missing Dexter today, but good luck with your game, Dex. And instead, I have the lovely Victoria joining us. How are you tonight, Victoria?
I'm doing really well. Super excited to be here, and definitely all my toes and fingers crossed for Dex and his players, because I think it's awesome that he does that, the way he gives back to his community. So glad to be here, but also missing him.
Yes. I'm sure that he'll do great. He's very excited for it. and we also have the wonderful Pam. Hello, Pam.
Hello. Hi, Faziana. Hi, Victoria. Good to hear you both.
You
good to have you here.
So we have two good contests that we're going to be... Yes, great to have you here. Yay, I have Victoria and Pam, the LNP rock stars.
Yay.
Right, I missed that in my opening. I changed the opening because Dexter wasn't here. So Late Night Poets is a group on the website, allpoetry.com. You don't have to be in the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because we post the poems in the chat, and you can read along with us, plus you can participate in the chat. It is awesome to have you all here. We have some great poems. We're going to start with the carryovers from last show, which was for the contest Dexter held about faith. And then if we have time, we're going to do the contest that I ran about rain. And if we run out of time before we finish them all, then they will carry over to the next show. So we're going to get going on the faith one. And I will read this first poem. So this is called Easier and More Comfortable by Jen's Gone Mad. The ease and comfort in knowing my insides could spontaneously combust, sparks a grin, or the rapture keeps me smiling, looking more possible daily. I sleep well at night knowing all things come to an end. Feelings aren't facts. They change constantly, and everyone eventually gets theirs. Just have to believe, trust the process, set my alarm on repeat with daily reminders, giving it over to be handled by divine intervention. My intervention went like any family gathering. Everyone got drunk, and at least one of my aunts cried over her incessant urge to drink, ending in me leaving while they licked their wounds. Knowing and having faith do differ dramatically. Faith, I have faith in finality. Takes a load off to know I'll have no load to bear at all in the end. End poem.
Oh, Faith, that was a stunning, stunning read. And what a wonderful write by Jen's Got Mad. Thank you both for that. And Pam, since you're here, would you mind being the top rock star and starting us off with your thoughts?
Well, I'll attempt to. I really like this one. I like the fact that it reminds us that all things come to an end. And when something feels like you'll carry a heavy burden forever, you know, I sleep well at night knowing all things come to an end. Feelings aren't facts. They change constantly. I think that's an important thing to remember is that feelings aren't facts, and sometimes we have to step back from our feelings. I really like, too, that she threw some humor in here with that my intervention went like any family gathering. And, oh, my goodness, is that totally relatable. You know, and then, you know, the knowing and having faith do differ. I think that's true because you can know a lot about many different religions. You can read all the religious books out there, the Bible, the Quran, whatever, you know, you can think of, and have the information stored in your brain. But, you know, actually having faith is something that it's not necessarily a knowledge, but rather something that you carry in your spirit. I can't quite describe it, but I like the way she says that there's a difference between knowing faith and having faith. I just think this is an excellent write all the way through and very well done.
Oh, that was such a stunning comment, Pam. And I love kind of that rumination that you even gave on how there is that difference, because you can know facts, you know, but faith is believing in what you can't see, what isn't always provable. You can know things. It doesn't mean that you necessarily connect with them. And so I think that's an important part of your comment. Even the mention of understanding that all things come to finality, that was actually something that really stuck out to me as well. Our society so often fears kind of, oh my goodness, my fire alarm just went off. I don't know why. That was odd. Okay, so our society kind of moves away from finality, from death. We don't like the unknown. Why is it that every time I talk, it goes off? Faith, I'm going to talk
to you.
You
can go check on your kids.
I'll
take over.
Okay, sorry.
That's okay. that was a great comment until she got interrupted by the fire. So hopefully everything's cool at her house. We do have another caller, I see, and I'm not sure who this is yet. So welcome to our newest caller. And may I ask who's calling?
Hi.
Hi. Welcome, Tom. Were you able to hear the poem by Jen's Gone Mad?
No, I just got on, and I caught the very end, and I couldn't say anything intelligent, I promise you.
That's perfectly fine. We'll skip you until the next one.
Okay.
Well, I agreed with Pam's comment. I loved the part about it being like a family gathering where the one aunt is crying and this person ends up leaving and they all have to lick their wounds after potential conflict that was there. I thought that was something that made this really relatable and accessible to readers. I thought that the part about the difference between knowing the faith and having the faith, like Pam said, was an important distinction, and that it was very well done in the way that it was laid out. There was something kind of conversational about this. It's very straightforward, and it just flowed very naturally, so I really enjoyed it. Thank you, Gems God Mad, for submitting. Victoria, are you back? No, she's probably still dealing with some things. So I am just going to move along. And Thomas, were you, did you have something that you wanted to share? Did you write something for us today?
I don't know if I've got anything on here or not, to be honest with you.
Okay, I don't see you on my list, but if you want to be a reader for me, that would be awesome.
Oh, I'll be happy to read.
Okay, so I am putting up one by Eric Svensson, if you would be willing to read that one.
Yes. Certainly. Night at the Opera by Eric Svensson. Oh, miracle matrix, amino acids double helix twirl, swirl, a conundrum of being. Aladdin rubs the brass lamp. Sprightly genie appears true as faith. Invisible, yet tangible glue. Quantum field, sticky tape. Body, systems, religiously function. Lungs, breathe without question. Metronome, heart, beat, faithfully. Blind man's bluff. Perfect the art of living in the now. Erase yesterday and tomorrow. Stayed faces of unshakable chrysalis dangles secure in backside of Socrates' cave. Fearless exploration of toddlers. Trepidation unheard of. Curio's mind still unpolluted, crystal clear brooks gurgle. Observe faith in action. Let there be light. Mighty mojo words sparked the big bang. Miracle matrix still burrs. Galaxies amino acid double helix twirl. Swirl. Curiosity, conundrum to define faith. Nights at the Opera. Prima donna pandemic spreads her demure death cloak. Dream requiem splinter in glass menageries. Fade to black men, mice and minstrels until your mustard seed voice decrees. Let there be light. End poem.
Excellent read. Thank you, Tom. I think that you were a great voice for this poem. I really enjoyed this by Eric Svensson. I thought that the part with the children was my favorite. The toddlers. Fearless exploration of toddlers, trepidation unheard of, curious mind still unpolluted, crystal clear brooks gurgle, observe faith in action. There's something so pure and exciting about a child who you know believes the best in people, believes in everything going to be okay, and enjoying things so unhindered by everything that eventually kind of jades us, having that curiosity. I like that they that he uses the word unpolluted, especially because then he's talking about, like, the brooks gurgling and, like, you know, there's the nature imagery, and the child's mind is unpolluted and probably the purest of faiths, not necessarily the most knowledge about a faith, but the that kind of, like, natural connection to things. So I really appreciated that stanza. And in the final stanza, I loved, "Prima donna pandemic spreads her demure death cloak, dream requiem splinter in glass menageries." Like, that is such an intense couple of lines. And also, demure death cloak just has a cool ring to it. I love that. I feel like that could be a title of a whole new poem. Pam, what did you think?
Oh, my goodness. There's so many great lines in here. I did like "blind man's bluff, perfect the art of living in the now, erase yesterday and tomorrow," that appreciation of living in the moment. I also like the first line where it says, "Oh, miracle matrix, amino acid, double helix, twirl," that pays homage to the process of life being created. It's a miracle in itself and worthy of praise. The mighty mojo words sparked the Big Bang, miracle matrix, still bursts galaxies, amino acid, double helix, twirl, swirl, coriolis conundrum to define faith. I feel like that stanza is speaking on there is science and faith can coexist with one another, that you can be a scientist or someone who looks at the scientific nature of the world and see that as proof of faith. Well, this is a wonderful write all the way through, but I do like that he says, where the last stanza that you mentioned where it says, "the prima donna pandemic spreads until your mustard seed voice decrees, let there be light." I like that it touches on nowadays with what we've been through recently with the pandemic, but also goes back to that old saying about having that mustard seed of faith. And, the mustard seed, it just needs to be that small voice. There doesn't need to be, like, a big, bellowing, godlike voice. It can just be simply what speaks inside your heart. I think this is a wonderful write all the way through and very well done.
That was a great comment. Thank you, Pam. Victoria, what were your thoughts?
So I thought that this was a really fun piece that kind of danced along not just the ideas of faith, but the way in which it impacts us. There was a lot of fun because we have, for example, the Big Bang, but we also have that Big Bang coming from the idea of someone saying, "Let there be light." And so there's, as a Christian, there's been jokes in my younger years that, you know, the Big Bang could have just been God speaking. And whether you believe in the Christian God or any other deity, there is that concept of the Big Bang being fully possible if they are the ones who did something to initiate it all. But it also shows the way in which nature kind of happens. We have amino acids, double helixes, so the building blocks of life twirling together, creating these curiosities, and they sometimes can create this conundrum that might define someone's faith. And it actually reminds me of my father, who, since he has a scientific mind, he's a doctor, he often looks at things that are outside of just biblical references to try and find things that would substantiate the faith that he believes in, which is, you know, everyone gets to go to their faith as they each wish to. The fearless exploration of toddlers, trepidation unheard of, curious minds still unpolluted, crystal clear brooks gurgle, observed faith in action. That again reminds me of the Christian saying, which and I'm sure it's in other religions, but how children are often seen as having pure, innocent faith. They don't have a reason to be polluted by other thoughts that may not be in the traditional values of the faith in which you believe. The way that you can find security even against death in uncertain times, such as a pandemic, how faith can be that thing that you kind of just adhere to. And yet, I really love those last two lines, until your mustard seed voice decrees, let there be light. That reminds me, too, that faith is like a mustard seed. Biblically, faith is like a mustard seed. It starts so small, and yet it becomes so big and vibrant and beautiful. And so to have a voice that says, let there be light, to start the world and let there be light, to clear away the darkness or the fear, I think that is so poignant, and it speaks so deeply to the way in which we cling to faith, the way in which we look to it for guidance and for hope in uncertain times. And I think that that's just a beautiful testament to their faith. So really, really quite beautifully done without being overtly religious or preachy in their words. I think just about anybody could relate to something such as this.
That was a wonderful comment. Thomas, what were your thoughts?
I could write books, and I won't. Not tonight. I like the business about the amino acids, double helix twirl, because if you stop and think for a moment, the helix and the things that make up the genetic formula are simplicity itself, but really provide no real predictability about the fate, the purpose, or the direction of any single human being. They're always a question. They're always a possibility. You go to the next bit about lungs, breath without question, metronome, heartbeats faithfully, and yet even there, because when you look at chaos theory, which is really about how there are fine, minute distinctions in everything that do not lend themselves to predictability and cause shifts and differences. God's a very creative intelligence, if you stop and think about it. And as we come down to the last often spoken of pair of verses, I'm reminded of when Elijah went to the mountain and with one of his disciples and pointed out that God is not to be found in the thunderstorms or the shaking of the mountains, but in that small, still voice within you. And that if you have the faith, the mustard seed, you must still give your faith direction and listen. There's a great deal in here that is beautifully brought forward by speaking so much of what we do know and what we don't know and how much wonder is available to us while we're still learning how ignorant we really are. Beautiful piece.
Thank you, Tom. Pam, would you please read the one by Theodora Anderson?
I would be happy to. Let me just get back there and write. This is What is Faith Without Hope by Theodora Anderson, and it goes like this. Hope starved through crescents of moon, was revived by the chorus of spring peppers on their last croak. She rests softly like a kiss on the lunar moth's silvery wings, only to take flight to a tree of evergreen. I see her inside the snow-covered canopy, shining bright like a large ruby under sea. But I will hold on her. I will hold on her till as long as I can, as she is my grief-laden candle on its wick's end. End poem.
Oh, beautiful read, Pam. And what a beautiful write by Theodore Anderson. Tom, would you mind starting us off with your comment?
Certainly. This is a really beautiful piece. I like the gentleness of the images and how even when she speaks in negatives, like, where was that? A strange pepper is on their last croak. She brings it forward in such a positive way. She rests softly like a kiss on a lunar moth's silvery wings. And even when she speaks of her own grief-laden candle on its wick's end, you can hear that her faith keeps her available to the possibility that other things are possible and that goodness is always there to be found. I love the description of it as shining bright like a large ruby under sea. This is just a lovely, positive, sort of almost a lullaby gospel at once. Very lovely to hear.
Oh, that was a really stunning comment. And I agree, there is a real beauty in her appreciation for situations that aren't always enjoyable, for times that can seem like the end or can seem, and I think you pointed it perfectly in the stanza, shining bright like a large ruby under sea. You can seem like you're drowning. You can have these moments, and yet there can still be beauty. There can still be hope, and faith can offer that. I think that was a beautifully poignant comment, Thomas. Thank you. And Pam, what did you think of this?
Unmute.
I do think the mute monster got
Pam.
Oh,
I thought this was absolutely just beautiful. It darker at first with the hope-starved, the idea that, you know, you're struggling to find hope, but still keeps the hold of faith, even with that, I thought was really nice. I like the imagery of she rests softly like a kiss on a lunar moth's silver wings, only to take flight to a tree of evergreen. And I like that she went with taking flight to the tree of evergreen, a sign of, like, eternal life. I thought that was really cool. And, I really like how the stanzas are very short and impactful, and she separates sometimes where she only has a couple words per line so that it really makes you focus and concentrate on each part. So I think it's beautifully written and very well done.
Oh, that was really beautifully said, Pam. And I find that I'm agreeing because you're right. There is these beautiful stanzas that are poignant and complete, even in their brevity. She's painting these vibrant pictures that we can connect with and resonate with. And yet in this entire time, we see that hope, be it the shining of the light, the ever-living, evergreen, all while understanding that sometimes these situations do starve hope and not feed into it. Really, really beautifully said. And Faze, what did you think?
I loved her descriptions. That hope is starved through crescents of moons makes me think about how, you know, when the moon is in its crescents, there's not very much light. But the moon is cyclical. There will be more light again. There will come a full moon. And I feel like hope is knowing that, is understanding that even when you're in the dark times, that there's still going to be some brightness ahead. So I thought the moon was a really good choice right there. And then with the tree, the butterfly takes flight to the tree, and she's inside the snow-covered canopy. So it seems like it's all covered up in this white that maybe seems like it would be like death, because in the winter everything's kind of all covered up. But underneath that snow-covered canopy, there is still that lush green of the evergreen, and there's still life there. So even when things are covered up by the hard times, there's something good underneath. And I thought that this was just handled absolutely beautifully. The candle that's at the end of its wick, every bit of this had just beautiful imagery that really brought to life her concepts. So I was very impressed with this poem.
Oh, that was a stunning comment. And I agree, this really does kind of bring to life these new concepts. And for me, at least, I find the whole concept of starved hope still being something of beauty being able to cling to. I think that's a hard concept for people to want to believe. And as someone who has had moments in my life, and I think we all have had moments in our life where we struggle with our faith, it's hard sometimes to believe that when things are starved, when you feel like your faith is starved or your hope is starved, it's hard to find that hope that just keeps going, because after so many bad things, it calls into question. So I love that comment, because it really does remind us that other people are going through this too, that we're not alone in our struggle. We're not alone in our desire to have hope and even being bubbly against the darkness. I think that's, you said it far better than I, but I think that's really poignant. And I agree with what everyone said. I think that this is just a beautiful piece that really resonates upon the way in which life can beat us down. And yet to have hope, to have faith, even in these moments, to know that eventually it's going to have to end. Something is going to end. The situation will end. And that even if that is the only hope, even if it is flying off to an evergreen, we are not stuck in this one moment. And I can see where hope can live there. When you've been through so much darkness, or you're in a storm, if you will, it can seem like you're leaving a hurricane to go into go over a river, or go off a cliff, or maybe fall off the edge of the earth if you follow old lore. But there can also be that beauty of understanding that something good can come from these. It may not always be what we expected. And I think that's what I really like about this, is that it provides us these scenarios that are less than ideal, but the resolution isn't ever told what it is. It doesn't say, well, it's going to get better. It's just, it will end. And I think that's really, really important, because sometimes we do, stumble out of the woods with a bear chasing us to fall off of a cliff, it seems, which is, from bad to worse, but one ended, and that this next moment will too. And there's that hope in that. It kind of twists my brain, because we often don't say that there's hope if things go from bad to worse, but there still can be. And I think that's what really sticks out to me in this poem, is that while we don't get a resolution of those situations, we don't know if the ruby was ever pulled from the sea, or perhaps it just sunk a little deeper. There was still that hope there, even in that dark hour. I think this is just a really stunning piece that reminds us that even at the end, something's going to happen. Something's going to change, for better or worse. We're not stuck in that one place. Just really, really interesting, right? With beautiful dark undertones without being overly depressing, if that makes sense. So, all right, Paige, where do you want to take us to?
I want to do the one by Pink Fairy. Can you read that one for us?
I'd love to. Faith in Guardian Angel Voices by Pink Fairy 5. There was the voice again, insistent and intense, inside my head, but not derived from me, brought by an unknown source. Go to the library. Take your book back. My book is already late. Taking it back after hours makes no sense. However, I've heard the voice before. Slam on your brakes, now! And it has saved my life at least twice, maybe three times. I bathed three little girls. My back was breaking. All I wanted to do was sit in a chair. It was 9 p.m. Take that book back, now. I asked my husband to take it for me. You have to pay the fine anyway. Take it back tomorrow. My faith in the voice was still felt. I took the library book back. 17 preteen and teen girls were in the library parking lot, lost. They were from a small town, and they had no idea how to get back to their buses. Worried sponsors would be looking for them. 17 lost girls. Get in, I said. I hit the unlock button and they piled in the biggest station wagon on the planet. I took them back to their buses where 10 worried adults were staring into space, wondering where 17 lost girls were. I think their guardian angels had faith that I would hear their plea, that I would come by myself, a small woman, alone, so they would not be frightened. They had to find a woman who also had a large vehicle. Their faith in me and mine in them intensified that day in March 1980. End poem. Man, I hope I'm not the only one who has goosebumps. Faith, what do you think of this? Got some goosebumps as a librarian?
Yes. I know. At first, I was curious where that was going to go with the library and take your book back. Because it's, you know, it's kind of this stereotypical thing where people always think that I'm going to be mad at them for having their books late. Meanwhile, I'm like the absolute worst for that, and I'm there every day. But I really like how this turned out. Having that undeniable urge to go get the book back right away, and then have a reason for it, that something that happened, that she was needed there. It's very intense. I have to say, Victoria, I loved the emphasis that you put on now, which she asks for by having all caps in that word and the exclamation marks. But I think you read that very nicely, and it shows how in her writing she used the font and the capitals to make that come to life for readers as well. The idea that there's this moment where she felt like she had to do something, and then there was something there reinforcing her faith is really a great story. I don't know if this is a true story or something that she's just telling for us, but I really enjoyed this poem. I think it's a great storytelling poem, and yet it had a very poetic feel to it. She's really good at telling stories through poetry, so I love that.
Absolutely, and you're right. She really did do an amazing job of using the words that she wrote with to really create a story that gives those emphasis, like you said, both those nows, the insistent now, which we already knew from the beginning of the story, the insistent and intentional voice. She does this beautiful job of creating this dynamic between the voice and what's going on in her life. So I do have to tease you. Can a librarian be late bringing the books back if it's their library's books to begin with? That's a conundrum.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, there's multiple departments, and so like the people who are in charge of the circulation of the books, the check-in, check-out, are generally not librarians. I find that the people who work in that department tend to be more like about like it comes in, it goes out, whereas the librarians tend to be more theoretical and more into like the activities and stuff. And we are all very much like in our heads and not the best with time. So.
Well, next time you have a problem with those check-in, check-out people, just remind them you're the librarian. They're all your books already anyways. So, you know.
Uh-huh. I know. They do tend to waive my fines if it's library related at least, but yes, I'm the worst. And you're allowed a maximum of 100 books, and for most people that's huge, but because I run activities for kids, I always have like a million books on the go for different age groups. So I'm notorious for having more than I'm supposed to have.
That makes sense.
I love it. It does. It does make sense. And Thomas, what did you think of this piece?
Oh, this is my life. Sorry. I just live by the rule that if you listen, you get called. I hitchhiked across the United States more than once, and oftentimes took like 150, 200 mile detour because I just knew I was supposed to visit somebody and they'd go, you know, I was just thinking about you. it's really funny because, you know, I suffer from high anxiety, and so I tend to over-talk when I'm verging on a panic attack. And yet at the same time, I would say most of my life is about listening. Because when you listen to people, I used to work as a therapist with runaways and their families in crisis, all that stuff. And I always tell people, if you listen, really listen to people, they'll tell you everything you need to know about them in the first five sentences. And this poem speaks so perfectly to what I see as a larger universe that energetically is so deeply interconnected that whatever you want to call that great force wants us all to work together, wants us all to be as one, and will give you every opportunity possible to discover it. Enough said.
Beautifully said. And I think what really resonated about your comment for me as well is that so many times when we beseech the great beyond, the universe, God, whatever deity people believe in, we usually have this idea of a set answer. And I'm sure that when those sponsors were praying for those teens, they weren't praying for someone to miraculously bring those teens back. They were praying that the teens would come back, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
But it reminds us that so often we can have our yearnings and our prayers answered, not always in the way that we expect, but they can be answered. And it does make you wonder if perhaps some answers are missed because we are not listening for the answer and rather listening for the answer we expect, which you can even see in person-to-person dynamics. So,
very well said.
Well, you're the one who said it first. I just summarized. So thank you for sharing that wonderful comment, Thomas. And Pam, what did you think of this?
Oh, I really like this. I do, like Faziana said, she has a wonderful way of telling stories in her poem. Now, I don't believe this is true. I don't believe this actually happened. But the nice thing about a story like this, while the story itself is not true, there's elements of potential truth in it because we do all have that inner voice that speaks to us. And there are times that it comes out and when it needs to, your life needs to be saved or there's just, you know, something to pass along, a moment where you're needed to be in a specific place. I remember there was when I was with my two youngest children. My two oldest are 11 months apart. My two youngest are 18 months apart. And I was with my two youngest, oh wait, no, take that back, too old, because I didn't have the two youngest yet, and they were still toddlers, and I was looking for a playground because we just moved to a new town, and I was about to give up, but I just kept trying, and I came to this playground, and I sat down, and I was watching the kids play, and this mother sat next to me, and she had a baby 1 year old, and she was pregnant, and she said, I just don't know anybody who has kids as close as mine are going to be. And then she asked me, can you tell me how do you do it? And she just, it wasn't that I had necessarily the right answers for her. I mean, I don't even remember what my answers were, but I just felt like in that moment that mother needed to talk to another mother who was in a similar circumstance as her. And that I had been put in that place at that time for that purpose. And so I really like how this is that right on, you know, being put in the right time and place for a purpose and having, listening to that inner voice that tells you, keep searching, keep going back, or go back to that library, return that book, because yeah, it could wait a day, but there's something more important out there. We don't always see the big picture right away, and I think this is just an excellent write all the way through and very well done.
Oh, Pam, that was such a beautiful comment, and thank you for sharing even that experience, because I know so. I've always been a person who I've wanted to hear the direction. You know, you hear those stories about people who are driving down the road and they get this urge to buy milk, and they don't know why they get the urge to buy milk. They don't need milk, but they buy milk. I remember that poignantly when the old spam mail emails were going around, you know, when emails finally became a big thing, and you'd get those like chain mail ones. But it was this one, and it was about this person driving home, and they have felt the need to go buy milk. And even this poem, it speaks of that voice that's telling someone to do something, even though there's, you know, no real logical reason for it. But what I appreciate about your comment is that it wasn't necessarily a voice. It was just you were guided to that spot because, you know, that's how things fell, you know, be it you were actually directed there, or be it just you missed other parts, whatever the reason, you were put in the right place at the right time. And that's so beautiful, because I have struggled with feeling like in my faith that when I pray, I'm heard. And probably because I've desired to hear and felt like I cannot, like I don't get those little urgings to be those places. And so I love Thomas's comment, because he spent his life listening. But even as I sit and I listen, I don't always get to hear. I don't get to hear how I can be useful, how I can be a blessing. And so I love your comment for that, because it wasn't necessarily about hearing that voice. It was just about allowing your life to be directed how it needed to be in that moment to be a blessing to someone. And I think that is just as poignant as of hearing an actual voice. Thank you for that, Pam, because your comment really helped me relate deeper to this poem. So I appreciate you and it for that. I think what I really loved about this is that it does remind us that sometimes those thoughts and those voices that we might hear or get to hear, they don't always make sense. And I love how there was almost that waving away as she told this story. The idea of, well, I'm washing the kids, I'm getting them ready for bed. And as a mother who just bathes her children, it is definitely something that you just kind of have to be aware of, because it's not just about them drowning. they could also make a gigantic mess that you're going to have to clean up if you don't watch them. And they're going to crawl out of the bathtub because they need to pee, and then they could smack their head. Like, there's just a lot going on when you bathe a baby, even if they're 2 and 4. There's just a lot going on. And so what I really love about this is that it does have that waving away. It almost feels like the story of Moses with all the excuses for why she can't do this. And yet, in the end, she's still the one who goes and does that. Her husband's unwilling. She's bathing the kids, all these things. Her life is directed to be in that place. And in being in that place, she's able to be a blessing. It wasn't necessarily that she knew why she was being brought there. It wasn't that she necessarily even wanted to be there, but life brought her there. And just like what you were saying, Pam, you weren't seeking out to be a help to someone. You didn't think that there was a great reason, perhaps, that you were there. It may have just been that this woman saw someone and took that opportunity. But the beauty of how we can be blessings in even the smallest way is so apparent in both Pam's comments and this poem, because it wasn't these great acts of grandeur. It wasn't these self-sacrifices that people would pore over and think of for decades. You know, the woman, as much as it sucks to think, the woman probably doesn't even remember Pam's name. But what she does remember is probably the welcoming acceptance and encouragement that Pam gave. And that's what's really important and really shows how those blessings can be, how those guardian angels can be, because I assure you, that woman probably has thought that Pam was a guardian angel in her own way while she was dealing with a toddler and a baby. Just beautiful comment, beautiful poem, just all around. I appreciate this because it reminds us that we don't have to hear a voice to be a blessing. Sometimes we just have to figure out where we're supposed to be, even if that is driving around for 25 minutes looking for a park. So, Faze, where would you like to take us now?
I'm going to read one by Allison Hodges. This is called Sunlight of the Spirit. I walk in confidence towards the sunlight of the Spirit, things I have heard of, but have yet to experience for myself. The sunlight hides beneath the clouds, and strain as I will, I cannot see it. I march forward towards the unknown, as if my destiny were clear. Some days, my footsteps falter as I battle to keep my will in line. Each foot drags across the ground while fear dogs my every step. Yet, however tentative I become, I persistently pursue the sunbeams. Great temptation follows me always, saying this is too foolish to follow. I surge towards the sunrise, firmly treading on each stepping stone. I am certain that the sunlight holds the key to all of life, all of death, and all of me.
Oh, what a beautiful read, Faze, and what a fantastic write by Allison Hodges. I think what I really appreciate about this is that it reminds me almost like chasing a rainbow. You're never going to catch the rainbow, but by golly, how many times as a kid do we try? And trying to meet the sun where it rises, which is the image that I'm kind of left with, this idea of meeting the sun where it rises. We're never going to do that because, you know, sun is not on the earth. Sunlight is on the earth, but the sun is not on the earth. And you'll just keep going in circles. But that path can feel foolish. Chasing a rainbow can feel foolish. And yet there's a beauty in that pursuit, in the understanding that it's a journey, and it's going to be a long journey, especially in a world where you can buy just about anything that you want on the internet. If you can't find it in a store, Amazon will get it to you in a few days. We have really lost the ability to be patient and to understand that we don't always get the things that we want. And so I love this because in many ways, this poem is a direct confrontation of that, this idea of continuing the path, even if progress is slow or invisible, you know, having the faith that there's something that you're going to get to where you need to, that you're going to be where you need to be, and you just need to keep taking those footsteps, even the faltering of that, which is such a human acknowledgement, because some days taking this road is easier than others. having that temptation, those voices of those that mock, that may not understand why you do what you do. I think this is just a beautifully human piece, but also one that shows devotion and the patience and willingness to continue on, even when we don't always see that instant gratification that we're so used to. Just a stunning rite. And Thomas, I heard you chuckle. What did you think of this?
Well, there's both an innocence in this and a bravery in this. The innocence is simply, I search till the sun dries, firmly treading with each stepping stone. I am certain that the sunlight holds the key to all of life, all of death, and all of me. But the bravery, and there is a lot of bravery in this, is some days my footsteps falter as I battle to keep my will in line. Each foot drags across the ground while fear dogs my every step. Yet, however tentative I become, I persistently pursue the sunbeams. Great temptations follow me always, saying, this is too foolish to follow. In a sense, and I'm restating it in my own language, when we are of great faith, we are willingly putting ourselves at risk with God, for we have surrendered, not given up, but turned ourselves over. And in doing so, you don't know what's coming. Because while the Bible is the guide, it's not the user manual to God. God is far larger than that book will ever be. And so you don't know what's going to be requested of you. You don't know where you're going to be guided by these sunbeams. But in faith, you are willing to follow. So, yes, there's a certain naivete and innocence in it, but there's an incredible level of bravery. I really enjoyed it.
I think that was a really stunning comment, especially the part where you mentioned how it's a surrender. Because so often we don't like to surrender. We think of surrender as this battle. And if you surrender, you've lost. But there is a bravery in it. There's that faith in trusting that you're in greater hands than your own, even if you don't always understand the path that you are on. I think that's just really poignant to remind us that sometimes we do surrender our will to something greater. We do surrender our thoughts to something greater or someone greater. And there is that faith and that bravery that comes with it that can often be misunderstood. Thank you for that, Thomas. That was a stunning comment. And Pam, what did you think of this?
I really like this. I like how there's a sense of determination to find that sunlight of the spirit, that inner light that you see other people having, but you just haven't quite gotten there yourself. And I like that she mentions each foot drags across the ground while fear dogs my every step. I thought that was a great line because it reminds us that while we're searching for that kind of light, that kind of sense of peace and joy, and purpose, that oftentimes fear will be there right behind us, and we just have to keep moving along. And I also like that she used the word stepping stone. I surge toward the sunrise, firmly treading on each stepping stone. So it isn't a path where it's just smooth and long. That, you know, the idea of stepping stones to me really gives you the idea that this is a journey that's taken, as many all journeys are, one step at a time. And then there's an importance in just being able to firmly step and keep your balance on each stone. And so I think it's just a wonderful rite all the way through and very well done.
Oh, that was such a beautiful comment. And I love even that reminder that in the faltering, there can still be strength, still continuing on, even when we're not always certain, that there's a beauty and a bravery in that. Absolutely. absolutely. And finally, Faith, what did you think?
I really liked the whole metaphor of the sunlight, and I don't even think it needs to be religious necessarily, even though we're talking about faith. I think it could be just kind of like faith that things are going to be okay, not necessarily in terms of like a deity, but faith in yourself that you are able to find better times. I liked that it starts off with the confidence, but it also recognizes that sometimes it's frustrated in, when it's talking about I cannot see it, you know, even though you know the sunlight is out there. People do have happiness. Sometimes when you're in depression or you have something going on, it feels like you're never going to experience the sun. But this person has a determination of still going, knowing the sun is out there if you just keep looking for it. And sometimes your feet do drag, and it feels like when it's talking about the foot dragging across the ground, I kind of think about those mornings where you wake up and you're just like, why even get up? I'm just going to hide under the covers and not deal with the day. And then if you push yourself, then maybe you will find that sunbeam. And that there's the challenge of stumbling, and yet every step is, like, no matter what, still going forward, even while there's the fear, even as there's the dragging foot. She's still going, and I liked that Pam pointed out, I think it was Pam, that the stepping stones are there, which shows that, yeah, it's not you're just, like, there on an escalator and it's all going to magically be better. You do have to fight for each step sometimes to get a hold of the joy or whatever it is that your goal is in life, and just having that faith in yourself to keep going is really powerful. So I really appreciated this piece.
Oh, I love that. Because you're right. We have spoken a lot about how this can be that a faith in a deity, and yet you're right. There can be those faiths in ourselves, the journey to be better for ourselves, to do better for ourselves and for our family. I think that's such a stunning comment. And I really love that perspective on it too, because it is a reminder that faith isn't always a religious thing. Sometimes it's just having a little bit of faith in yourself, in the path and the journey you want to take. So thank you for that, Faith. I appreciate it. And where do you want to take us to now?
We have one by Crescent Fairy, or The Crescent Fairy. Pam, would you read this one for us?
Absolutely, I'd be happy to. All right, this is Vignette on the Trending Kinetic Silhouette by The Crescent Fairy, and it goes like this. It has been trending all over social media, an Instagram and TikTok sensation, somewhat like shadow art in motion, gone viral in a frenzy and a fad like mania. It's women all of all shapes, sizes, races, ages, making selfies, portrait-like videos of themselves in artsy style shadow silhouettes in various poses and moving snapshots. It was started by a Westerner, a lady called Aurora, a name pleasing to me as it reminds me of Islamic green oral spectacles in the heavens. Auroras in the heavens, the backdrop of those shorts and video clips, lunar and stellar backgrounds of special effects, looking so heavenly for their poses. Lots of Muslim hijab ladies caught on the catchy trend, shooting their silhouette with their special filter of shooting stars like moon and auras, and they do all look cool posing in stylish silhouettes, making supplicatory starry peace sign and various actions. Muslim couples too start in these cinematic silhouettes posing in romantic poses like amorous lovebirds, and they all become black beauties of art for split seconds, whatever their skin pigment may be. No racism here for those real jet black skin tints. For once darkened and veiled in blackness, they look like such poetic shapes and profiled delineations. All got darker than life, photogenic melanin, blacked out for art, for black as beauty. It was all turn off the light, camera, action, action-packed motions and moves for a short, groovy movie. In Hijab, your contours and skin mostly veiled. As in Islam, only your soulmate can seize you up and map your body. It makes sense in every language to secure and hide your valuables. The outline of Hijab women looked more modest and decent for unveiled silhouettes of skimpy women obviously invite open, free, leering, by and pleasing of all male watchers. All and sundry, Muslims believe in being generous with your money, not your body and privacy. End poem.
Stunning read, Pam. Thank you so much for that. And what a wonderful ride by Z Crescent Ferry. Faith, what did you think of this?
I thought it was great to get a different perspective on here. And I think that it was really cool to look at it as like the modern women who wear hijabs. And the idea of the outlines of their hijabs and the beauty that they can have within that, and how everyone was exposing them, kind of expressing themselves in different ways. Now, I mean, I would not shame the women who are not wearing it, and don't wear it myself. But I think that it's great that they feel comfortable, you know, making style within the bounds of their faith. I think that it's cool that they can participate in the trends without, you know, denying what matters to them. And they can keep their veil, but also express themselves and their beauty. So I found this was really interesting. I appreciate Z Crescent Ferry for sharing this piece. And I also want to welcome Frank to the show.
Hello.
Welcome, Frank.
Hello there.
Hey, Frank, welcome.
Hello there. I was just observing your studious comment there, Dr. Sian. I would have to say, very, very proficient there.
Beautifully.
And what did you
and Faith does have a...
Hello?
Yep.
Oh,
yes.
We were wondering what you thought of the poem, Frank.
Oh, let me... okay. Obviously, the poem is enriched it's a very personal poem. It has very personal attachment to it. It does fall under the background of religion, in this case, Islam or the Muslim religion. But it talks about as well the beauty of what the hijab could represent, or what a woman should represent to a certain extent, or, you know, because we all have different observations. You know, I am a Westerner, you know, I can only try to understand, you know, the cultural differences with others, you know, and have respect. You know, I perhaps will never understand it to the true sense of what the veil represents, except that it perhaps represents... just a sense of a beauty, an internal beauty. That means that, you know, being aligned with your own self, you know, being aligned with who you are and finding that comfort within, but never shying away from who you are as a person. And I do, there is a bit of thoughts to me come up as well with those who do wear the veil at times, wear it you know, and they really don't really grasp to the essence of what it means, and they dress with, they see it more as fashion than what it represents in a religious sense. So I think that this poem has a lot of those overtures of what it represents, her you know, her observation. I thought the poem was sensational. I thought it was very sincere. I like the metaphors here, but I did like the self-reflection as well. You know, how she perceives her culture, or in this case, her religion. And I think it's very admirable that she can write a piece there and share it, you know, knowing, you know, what others may think, or, you know, or may others may perceive of her faith. You know, so this is a very admirable piece. I mean, I could go on and go on and go on, but I don't think that we have the time for that. But I like the, I would say, like the observations and in her opinions here in thoughts. They're very much constructive here, and it's very poetic. I thought the poem was very poetic as well.
Beautifully said, Frank. And I love too how you're right. There are definitely people who seem to think that the hijab is a fashion statement of some, in some shape or manner, and yet it's this beautiful reminder of how it deeply plays into her faith, into her life, the way in which it is, it can be honored, even though it can so often also be misunderstood. I think that was such a beautifully poignant comment. I am going to have to step away for 2 seconds. So, Faze, if you wouldn't mind directing comments. But Thomas,
I just wanted to say
you...
go ahead. I could say one last thing. I do agree with what Alfasiana says. You know, I think you set aside, you know, religion here. I think, you know, I think women themselves, veiled, unveiled, you know, have a sense of beauty. I don't think it's for the woman to have to prove to the man, you know, or the man. I think it doesn't, why should it fall on the woman itself? You know, there is a certain measure where a woman should be appreciated for her beauty with a veil or without a veil. You know, and if the issues come up, it's really not a problem. It's the problem of the man in this case, you know. There is that sense of guilt to provocation, but it shouldn't be that way. So I do agree with what Officer Anna said there.
Oh, I love that. Sorry, my younger sister's going to give a commentary. I agree. She came in here while Frank was giving his comment, and now she's just like, why are you looking at me like that? Because you're not supposed to be in here. but no, I love that comment, Frank, because I think it's so beautifully, it's true. So often there's this idea that women have to prove their worth based on how they look, based on how they dress, the way that they do their makeup, all these things. And really, it's not about a woman proving her worth to a man, but about a man sometimes discovering her worth. It goes back to the idea that other people cannot give you your worth. You have worth innately. And it is only when you get to, when you choose to unveil it to others, do they get to see the beauty of all that is you. So I love that. I am going to go take care of this little one so that she's not commenting on everything. And while I'm doing that, Thomas, would you mind sharing your thoughts on this piece?
Okay, happy to. I think the piece is beautiful. And it speaks to how we as human beings, first and foremost, no matter what our faith, find a way to express our beauty and to express who we are by our actions, by our form, by the way that we create with the art that is available to us. I mean, I'm one of those people who I'm comfortable with my clothes on, clothes off, don't really care. Though I've been to new beaches where I promise you, you'd hope that some people would realize that they really don't look that good with their clothes off. You just have to learn to accept. And in all cases, it's a practice of acceptance. And a practice in the accepting, taking the time to understand and discover, explore, be open to. I mean, I can remember reading history books about dirty old men with a Sears and Roebuck catalog, ogling the display of a woman's ankle. Some people will take anything they can get and make it into something that nobody wants to really think about. But most of us are much more civil and much more able to appreciate, understand, and be available to if we stop for a moment and realize how much more possibility there is when we greet each other with compassion and acceptance than when we greet each other from a defensive posture. Just a thought.
And Pam, what did you think of the poem?
I really like this. It's, first of all, well, it's a beautifully written prose poem. I just have to say that it is not technically a vignette, but that does not take away from the beauty of it. I would classify it more as prose. One of the things I particularly like about doing poetry shows is the fact that through poetry, people share themselves with us. Like, we know that this art form, this message of the silhouettes that of all women of different shapes and sizes and different skin tones, is important to Crescent Fairy. And we know that the wearing of the hijab and that part of her religion, her spirituality, is important to her. And I like that people share themselves with us. I don't necessarily agree with everything in the poem, but I don't have to. But there are definitely things I can respect. I do think there's nothing wrong with having, a certain sense of modesty. But at the same time, there's nothing wrong with, if it's your desire to dress however you want. I do think Frank made some really good points in his last comment. What this reminds me of is it reminds me of a few years back, there was an artist who videotaped people behind a screen where it was like an X-ray screen. So, and they would dance and hug and kiss, but all you would see is the skeletons. So it could be heterosexual couples, homosexual couples, men, women, 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 men, men. It didn't matter because all you saw were the bones, the skeleton. And it was such a beautiful example of how love is love. And when you get down to the bare bones of it, I think her appreciation for the art form, like I said, was wonderful, and the way the great thing about this poem is she very clearly expressed herself. It was a wonderful, straightforward style, and just very well done.
Well put, Pam. We have one more poem from this contest, and then we're going to move on to the next one, which will start with Frank's entry. But first I'm going to read this last poem from the previous contest. This is called Disconnected by Harperific. We are just little ants floating around in an infinite space on a spinning round rock. Religion never resounded with me, so I look to the sky, see puffy clouds bringing rain where others see a man up there granting wishes on the wind. The horizon shows me sunsets, colors no one can quite emulate. Not even Michelangelo could outdo these masterpieces of sunlight and atmosphere. Long needled pines house creatures all shapes and sizes, indiscriminate of color or class, reminding me that had I the need, they would house me as well. The waters, oh, the waters, life springs from springs, ocean contours, mountains, depths no man can conquer. Without spherical submarines, they will crush you if you try. Is it daring to state the faithless can find some kind of faith in our wondrous, bountiful planet? I myself find it quite magical, the daily surprises she brings me. We all have been so disconnected, you and I, from each other, from our mother, from our inner selves. End poem. I really love this personally from Harperific. I can see finding connection in nature, having a spiritual sense and believing in nature's ability to equalize things. Where I liked that she was talking about how the trees don't care about the shape or size or class of any of the creatures in it, and that you know, nature kind of embraces all, or maybe threatens all, depending on the situation. But there's an equality to it, and there's a beauty in so much of nature. As someone who's a little bit faithless myself these days, I like the, is it daring to state the faithless? Can I find some faith in our wondrous, bountiful planet? I like that she's showing that that she can find meaning and hope in something, even if it's not an organized religion. I thought that the way that she chose to lay this out, describing the scenes, and especially starting off with how we are ants, emphasizing that we are so small within such a big universe. I thought that she did this really interestingly and well done. And I like that the end kind of breaks it down and changes the format a bit, from each other, from our mother, from our inner selves. That repetition of from and the way that those are just short lines really, I think, is meant to make us think and gives you that moment to think with the empty space on those lines. So I was happy with that. Frank, what did you think of this poem?
Well, I have to say as well, I'm not really a religious person myself neither. But I can appreciate religion and appreciate spirituality of others because I'm human. I think this poem itself really perhaps should be called Reconnected, because I do feel that at times we get so lost in, you know, the commonality of faith in itself within religion that we don't realize that there is a beauty in itself, a spirituality that could be found within the essence of nature. And, you know, the way she talks, you know, in this poem here, it's very much, I would say, it is realistic. You know, she uses the poem to define a lot of things that are very much realistic. You know, we are just small little ants. You know, we are created of atoms, you know. We are so minuscule here, you know, considering what is the vast universe, and that of which is infinite, supposedly, or undiscovered. Yet at the same time, you know, there is that sense, I felt it was reconnecting instead of disconnecting. I like a little bit of the philosophy there that she you know, she brings in this poem here, because I am an avid follower of philosophy. There is that grace there as well in the descriptive nature of the way she describes the waters, the springs, the contours, the ocean. You know, there's a beauty there. Then I like this whole notion of the bountiful planet. I think the planet is bountiful. You know, when we appreciate it enough, and we're not contaminating it, but when we are much more involved in its preservation, its conservation, that's when I can see and understand the concept of, you know, the genuine concept of Mother Nature. And I like the way she says, we have all been so disconnected, you and I, from each other, from our mother, from our inner selves. Because in the end, the whole basis of a faith comes from within, regardless of its origin, you know, or its foundation. There has to be that awareness, that consciousness, and it comes from within. So I like the message of this poem here, and it's not often that I come across a poem like this that has a message like this. It's very profound. It's a very, very, very great poem. I really enjoyed this piece.
Thank you, Frank. That was a great comment. Victoria, welcome back. Were you able to hear or read the poem by Harperific?
I was able to hear the end of it, and I was able to read it as I was listening to even Frank's comment. And I think what I really liked about this is that while there is that reconnecting with perhaps even nature, there's this reminder that faith can be found in ourselves and in our connections with others and nature, of course. I mean, because who doesn't, and I'm sure there are some people, but I don't know of anybody who doesn't get at least a little revived by nature. And what this really reminds me of is that so many times we have so much media and so many sources, people, media, social networking, even your job, that can tell you how you're supposed to act, how you should act, the things that you should believe, the things that you should have faith in, be it religious or not. And yet there's a beauty when we're able to kind of go back to our roots and find ourselves. And that's what this poem really reminded me of, is returning to your true self, finding who you are. It may not be who you think you are. It may be who you used to be. It could be a lot of things, but sometimes we just need to have faith in ourselves and faith in our relationships, and to love and respect people as they are, to see the beauty that can come out of people who aren't necessarily what society even expects, but just the beauty of them being an individual who contributes to this world. Especially that first stanza, we're all just little ants floating around in an infinite space on a spinning round rock. So many times we forget how small we are compared to the grand scheme of things. And, you know, especially I think of like work, where, you know, someone may excel for whatever reason, but they think themselves grand until finally the big picture kind of comes out and it's like, man, you know, you didn't really make a name for yourself in history. This really is humbling in that respect. It's that reminder that that we're not all so great, that we get to leave an impact, and that we don't need to be caught up in these so many little things, because so many, you know, life, society, values, all that, it changes with the time and the place, and yet this rock continues to do as it is meant to spin and continue on its journey. And so to me, this really does feel like that calling back to who we are, being true to ourselves, and finding a way to truly connect with people rather than connect with people based upon expectations. Just a really beautiful piece, I think.
That was a beautiful response to it. We only have about half an hour left, and we have quite a few poems. So I think I'm going to limit it to just two comments per poem for the next little while, see how we can get through. Thomas did give us one on that's kind of in between our two topics, which is great, because it's a final one for the spirituality, and then it also mentions water, and the next contest is about rain. So I'm going to use that as our transition. Thomas, if you will read your poem for us.
Okay. This is The Tao Flows. Where creek runs lake and crane, stand still in the origami folds of sunlight. Time holds its breath as a breeze, runs its fingers along a ruffled feather. Children's laughter stirs, echoes in the distance. The poised crane takes no notice. A moment does not wait for visitors, no matter how often the mind betrays the being. Come, walk with me. Breathe the air. Notice how your footprints greet the earth. Become aware of the flow of energy, the dynamic interaction of life in the stillness of a second. How much a part you are in each vibrant beat. The mind, a subjective irritation insisting on separation as a step towards identification, but only creating emptiness, loneliness, until, for a second, when the thundering nonsense of the ego desists, a small, still voice echoes within us. End poem.
Awesome read. I really like how you paused after emptiness and loneliness. Those shorter lines, you had that dramatic pause that worked so nicely. I love origami folds of sunlight and talking about the breeze running its fingers along a ruffled feather. That just had like a texture to it, like a tactile experience of a feather. This worked really beautifully. I like that you talked about the interaction with nature and how connected everything can be. One of my favorite parts was, a moment does not wait for visitors. That is such a strong line right there. Pam, would you like to comment?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I did like how you mentioned, Fabiana, there's this idea of connection between everything, between people and humans. I really like, notice how your footprints meet the earth, become aware of the flow of energy. There actually has, I don't remember where I read it, but I read before about the importance of walking barefoot, especially on the earth. There's something about walking on dirt barefoot or walking outside barefoot that it does something to your energy, to your sense of peace and balance. And I truly believe that as somebody who spends most of her life walking around barefoot. The mind, a subjective irritation, to sound separate as a step towards identification, but only creating emptiness, loneliness. So many times we tend to overthink situations. We tend to start yelling at ourselves when really we just need to take that deep breath, quiet ourselves down, and listen to that still, small voice. I just think this is a beautiful and poignant write all the way through and very well done.
Nicely said, Pam. And then, Victoria, I'll get you to comment. And right after that, Frank, we're going to read your poem.
I was just going to say something really brief. Not this poem really brief. I thought it was just a wonderful message of the poem. And I scroll down, Thomas, and I see that you practice Tai Chi, which I just get that feeling of that. And I'm actually a practitioner of yoga. So I do ascribe to some this whole notion of Tai Chi. It's a meditative, good exercise. So I really enjoyed this piece here. I just wanted to say that. I'm sorry.
That's fine. Thank you. And Victoria, do you have any thoughts on Thomas's poem?
Absolutely. So it was actually, I remember being in college and studying Tufu and Mipo, because they were two different poets. But I believe it was Lao Tzu who really started the writings on Taoism, which is this philosophy or spiritual tradition of kind of living in harmony with really nature, you know, pattern, substance, the source of life, existence. And I feel like this poem really kind of captures that. You're capturing this beautiful moment of the creek, the crane, the way that the breeze is going, the way that children's laughter stirs. It's taking a moment to appreciate the moment in and of itself, because so many times we will chase after these moments, we'll chase after memories, and in many ways we lose a memory because of that, because we're so focused on what is to come or what has happened that we do not appreciate the present. And so I feel like this is in many ways a call to pause, to appreciate our surroundings, to appreciate the way that life forms around us in these beautiful picturesque ways that are so often missed because of this need to chase and remember and reminisce. And so I feel this like calm, beautiful peace that flows from this, as if we're taking that moment to pause and appreciate and feel our heartbeat, because it's a reminder of what life really is. It's not the future, it's not the past, but it's these independent little moments that we get to experience, and in this praise begs that we do not let those pass us by unnoticed. Just a really beautiful, beautiful piece. Thank you for this, Thomas.
Thank you.
Great comment. Now, Frank, I'm going to get you to read your poem for us, please.
All right. I didn't get a chance to write a new poem. I unfortunately didn't have time, but I added a pre-write, and it was, and the prompt I used was prompt number 7. So it goes like this. My poem is called Raindrops Come Falling Down. Raindrops come falling down with a wet moisture upon my forehead as a storm reached the edge of a pond. And I smell the waft of the fresh petrichor as I start to row slowly through naked currents. I touch the waters of the silent ripples with my bare hand, and I can feel the fine dew dropping from the sullen leaves, and I feel the dew at the touch of my fingers. There amidst the lush flowers blossoming, a wind in its brushes the lair of their petals before the bright sunlight of the morning sun, after the spring showers have then passed into the shadow of the glum trees. When I think about you during the day, I escape into the horizon of the clouds, where I know you will await me with wine and the sweet taste of your tender lips to entice my memory of your seduction. When I seem to miss your laughter, I find it in the sprinkles of the light rain. When I seem to long for your presence, I find it in the beautiful butterfly, a soft feather, a singing sparrow, to remind me of you always. Te siento en mi alma, te echo de menos, te busco en el cielo, donde te espero. I feel you in my soul, I miss you, I look for you in the sky, where I wait for you in the crypt.
Gorgeous read. Thank you. I love when you put the Spanish in there. I really like the way that you interacted with the water here in a really sensual experience. And it had almost a spirituality in that strong connection that you had to the rain and to the lover as well. I really liked when you referred to it as the sullen leaves, giving the leaves that qualifier just added something to it. I also really liked that it's a windiness that brushes the layers of the petals, that movement that you have throughout this. It's never just like the things are wet. It's dripping. It's a fine dew that has dropped. It is being touched. There's such a feeling of movement throughout. And with rain being our prompt, even though this is a pre-write, I think that you do a really good job at using water as a connection to feelings. And this is just a beautiful, beautiful poem with a wonderful read. Thomas, would you like to comment?
Thank you very much, then.
Did you ask me?
Yes, please.
Oh, okay. First of all, I always enjoy Frank's poems simply because I enjoy the level of sensuality, texture that is always so rich and available in his pieces. It's like furrowing a rich earth. And I just let the meaning be clutched in my fingers. This is just beautiful, and I like the way we move from the rowing upon the lake to thoughts about the trees and leaves and bushes that and flowers that surround the lake, and how the light moves through them, and then the memories of the woman, and speaking to those thoughts, and how much you miss her laughter when I find it in the sprinkles of a light rain, when I seem to long for your presence. And then it is found in so many things and in everything. For isn't that what love does to us? Make us feel that which we love can only be surrendered to the entire universe around us, because the joy demands that everything joins in with us. And so, for all the tenderness and intimacy in this piece, there's a great deal of strength, a great deal of joy, and a great sense of peace because of all of that. Lovely piece, Frank. Enjoy it all.
Oh, I think. I appreciate that, my friend. Thank you very much, Sam.
That was a wonderful comment. Thank you. Now, Victoria and Pam, I hope that you leave a written comment for Frank. I do have three audios that I want us to get through tonight, so I'm going
to
limit
comments.
I have comments
to go right now.
Okay, thank you so much. It was
Take
great
care.
To call.
Enjoy the rest of the show.
Good night.
Take care, my dear. Good night.
Thank you. Okay, so we're going to go with MK Rock's poem. And here we go.
Welcome Rain by M.K. Rock. Valley torrents wash clean this day as hawk screams fracture storm-blackened skies, cloud banks expelling swells of excessive weight, sponges sodden rung to pour in silk-soft cries, deluge tumbles, spray over clay-cracked plight. Cannon barrage is constant on concussive rails. Fire's echo reverberates within marrow's ride. Sonic drums pummel shapes of someday sails, reflections pooling inside of sunshine's hide, to cower from September's wildest arsenal hail. Sky exclaims, searing ions afloat petrichor, wafts of our potency rend in burnt ends strewn. Field-ready rose, staffed as future's yield, amber-gold trails, holding chaff-tended seeds, seas soaking all, Gaia's blessings of bounty bold. Whips loud in bolt resurgence, urge, prompting shock to proclaim, come, as some dares do. Platinum flashes split Thursday's darkest folds. Lightning stark crashes, snapping, coldly ensue. But nimbus scowls can't chase us far in fright. Elementals entreat to street rowdy puddle play. Cut us and bare feet muddled noontime delight, drizzly days tending a soul-free, shoeless norm. End poem.
Thank you so much for the audio. That was MK Rock, and she has such an eloquence and amazing vocabulary. Absolutely beautiful. Pam, would you like to comment?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that was just absolutely a beautiful reading. Wonderful use of imagery and sound, sonic drums, pummel shapes of Sunday sails. I really like how throughout this celebrates life and it celebrates the rain. And even when the storm comes, they find a reason not to find fear, but to find more reason to celebrate and appreciate the falling of the rain and the, you know, the beauty of it. So just an excellent write all the way through and very well done.
Well said, Pam. And Victoria, what did you think of MK's poem?
I mean, you said it right. She has this beautiful vocabulary that paints these amazing pictures. And what I remembered, what I felt as I listened to her read this is for a while there, I lived in Florida. And Florida has these wonderful, amazing rainstorms that come throughout the summer. It's an afternoon rain shower. It almost at 6 o'clock every day, rain. And what I remember is actually when I was pregnant with my eldest, I would go for a walk around the block because I was trying to get her out of me. And I remember in one of these walks, the sky, it just seemed like it broke open. And in seconds, you were just drenched. You couldn't even see maybe 5 feet in front of you. And the sound of the lightning and the thunder that just seemed to vibrate the air, it was this terrifying and yet intense experience. And in many ways, I feel that in this. But it's not so much a fear of these storms, but an awe of them, an appreciation of how magnificent they can be in their power and in their beauty. And yet, there's an understanding that without this, without these storms, there may not be life as we know it in many ways. Think of the deserts that bloom when they have that rare rainfall. And it makes me think, too, of those people who come into our lives as these magnificent storms that force change or a moment of pause upon us, and how that impacts us, be it a consistent rainfall or just one that comes as a monsoon in passing. I think this poem is so amazingly beautiful at face value and yet beautifully deep as you dig into it, which I'm not surprised. Mindy has a way of doing that, but it is definitely stunning.
That was really insightful. Thank you for adding that extra layer of thought for us to look at, because I think it is a layered poem. Now, this is for the contest Pluviophile in the Petrichor, which is my home is basically overrun by forest fires currently. So I already had a trip planned, but I am visiting my family in Ontario, and been raining the whole time that I'm here, and everyone else is upset about the rain, and I am just absolutely loving it because I'm like, I can breathe and nothing is on fire, and I'm loving it. So this inspired this contest of like the love of rain, because pluviophile means like you like rain and you like storms, and then petrichor is the smell after it rains. So all of the quotes were kind of about like positive aspects of rain, and it's because I was just totally lost in this like rain dance in the yard. So that's the inspiration for this contest. Our next poem is by Martha Gettle, and I do have a SoundCloud for that as well.
Recollections of Rain by Martha Gettle. It is raining outside again. I feel a little sad, but then I recall how as a child I loved the storm wet and wild. Such fun there was in my mind each time rainy weather I'd find. A flash of light across the sky, a boom of thunder echoes high. The rain is pelting down in sheets, little rivers in the streets. The rain is falling everywhere, splashing down without a care. In that rain I'd love to stay, as a child to laugh and play. A small boy has a paper boat. He runs with it as it does float. Along the gutter, swift and fast, the many waves it does outlast. I watch him happily at play. My mind goes back to yesterday. I think of all the many years I played in the rain with no fear. The thunder beat its loud tattoo. I'd feel it vibrate through and through. I hear it hitting my roof hard, almost in rhythm does it bombard. I used to play in the rain, it's true, all the puddles I'd splash through. Under a tree I'd catch my breath, playing in the rain was the very best. Then as if a switch is flipped, the clouds part as if they're clipped. As the bright rainbow fills the sky, and to the storm I bid goodbye, I am smiling, thinking you know, of rainy days and soft rainbows.
Thank you for that
and
SoundCloud.
Home.
I do love when people send us SoundClouds. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Martha. The part in when it talks about it's as if a switch has been flipped and the clouds part reminds me, on my wedding day, there was a storm. And you could see it coming as, and we had an outdoor ceremony and like we were like in this big field. So really it was not going to be a good thing if it rained during the ceremony. But right as we were about to walk down the aisle the second time, like go the other way out from the ceremony, the clouds parted and it was like there was this beam of sunlight that went just on the aisle. It was like in a movie. It was completely, like, unrealistic. I couldn't believe it was happening. There was this beam of light as we walked out, and it just felt magical. And then right as we got to the end of the aisle, thunder hit so loud. And my husband's very into, like, Norse mythology, and we actually had kind of a Viking wedding, one of our friends said, "Thor has approved this union," and then lightning. It was just perfect timing. So when she said that about the rain, the clouds parting, that's all I could think about was that magical moment at my wedding where it waited right until the ceremony ended, and then it poured. But it waited just in time. I really, really liked the way that she's so straightforward and playful, and she captures that nostalgia and joy that, you know, in childhood, the rain is totally different than when we're adults and we might see it as an inconvenience. So I really loved the way she played with this. And again, it's movement of the water along the gutter, swift and fast. Something about the way that she describes it all and how it's like bombarding and making music, the rhythm of it, it's powerful. Thomas, would you like to comment?
I find it a beautiful, shall we say, remembrance of going back to when life was simpler, when our joys were clearer, and when rain wasn't an interruption, but an occasion to be greeted with joy. It brought back great memories that I have as a kid, playing in the rain, racing down through mudslides when I was in high school. I went to a private school. We all did these big, long mudslides in a thunderstorm. And then went and stood in the showers with our clothes on, let all the mud and gunk run off, stopped up all the drains. It was great fun. There's such a joy in rain that I think we forget as adults when it becomes important to stay dry, keep our hair neat, not let the suit get ruined, yada, yada, yada. This is good. This takes you back to when the joy was the most important part of the whole thing. A great piece of great work. Really delightful.
Excellent comment. I feel like it's a contagious kind of feeling of enthusiasm that she brings to this. So I'm going to squeeze in one more poem that we have an audio for, and then all of the others are going to be read either tomorrow night, if there's time, on Part Center, Part Saint, which is technically Saturday morning, or on the next Double Helix in 2 weeks. So we're going to listen to Thirst by Chinaski, also known as Cal.
Raindrops, liquid crystalline ornaments, nourishing seeds. Thirst, quenched by softly brushing lips upon moments. Tasting life, caressing abandon, under fallen skies, rubber boots, rippling puddles. Water, thunder, insects moaning, scattered glass, feeding grass beds. Frozen moments, rims of a lake punctured by delicate beads thrown from bursting clouds.
Thank you, Cal, for that audio. I like liquid crystalline ornaments, and to describe it as nourishing seeds, because the rain really is nourishing, and, you know, it brings life to things. So to think of it, each drop as a seed is a really awesome way of putting it. I've never thought of it like that, but I love it. Victoria, what did you think? And you only have 3 minutes.
I agree. Okay, I'll be quick. No, I agree. I think this is really stunning because in many ways he's described rain, but he's done it in such a way that it gives a new appreciation to it. It's not just drops of water. It's all these beautiful things that impact that moment, impact the life around it. See it from nourishing seeds that are going to be drank up so hungrily by the ground to even just the thunder and the insects pausing, if only for a moment, which I think fits so beautifully with those frozen moments. It's a reminder that we live on a planet that is mostly made of water, even though we are predominantly land creatures. Water is everywhere, and it infuses this world. It infuses life, and be it in its gaseous form, its liquid form, or its frozen solid form, we have those memories of its travels there to play out the way in which it connects with life. I think it's just a really beautiful poem. So, yeah.
Thank you, Victoria. So in closing, we are going to carry over the rest of the poems. I'm going to try to do some tomorrow on Part Center, I guess in 2 days. It's hard with the time difference, but Part Center, Part Saint, which is the late night after midnight show, not tonight, but the next day, is one of my shows that I host, and I'm going to carry over what I can to that, and if not, then it will be on in 2 weeks on Double Helix again, and Dexter will be back with us next week, and he's actually filling in for Babbler on Part Center, Part Saint, so if you miss Dex tonight, you can catch him on Part Center, Part Saint in about half an hour. I believe Pam has a show. Is that right, Pam?
Yes, Break On Through, where we will be featuring poetry that's inspired by the artwork of René Magritte. So if you're able to join us, poetry readers and commenters, always welcome.
Awesome. Well, good night, everyone. Thank you so much for calling in. Thank you to Victoria for filling in for Dexter. And I hope that I see you all again very soon.
Take care.
Good night.